session number 20300, reel one.
Mr. Cobra, reel one. Where were you born, please?
Chingford, Essex.
Which year was this?
1921.
Did you grow up in Chingford?
No, I moved to Cockfosters, Hertfordshire, yeah, in 1926, when I was five.
Can you tell me about your schooling pre-war, please?
I went to a prep school in Kent called Wellesley House Broadstairs for 5 years. Then from 1935 to July 1940, I was at Rugby School in Warwickshire.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes.
Under what circumstances did you hear that?
I was staying with my younger brother and sister and my three first cousins, who were all girls much younger than me, at a house in Buckinghamshire, Great Missenden, Buckinghamshire, taken by my grandmother to house her grandchildren just before war broke out, and I was listening to it there.
What was your reaction to the news?
I thought it was pretty inevitable, and I realised that it wouldn't be long before I would be personally involved, because I was 18 the day before we declared war. On September the 2nd, I was 18. And on the 3rd of September 1939, Chamberlain declared war.
Did you feel any sense of dismay?
Not really. I don't think so. Not.
Did the war affect you at first?
It was interrupting my summer holidays by having to go with all these wretched younger relatives to stay in a boring place, and I preferred to be back at home playing golf and tennis with my friends. And I very soon did. After 3 days, I told my mother I'm coming back, and left them. So, but you asked me when war broke out. That's what happened. Oh, sorry.
Were you in any bombing of England by the German Air Force in the early part of the war?
Minor, to a minor degree. I did go up to... I was waiting to be called up in... when I left school in July 1940, and I was going to be called up to go to India. I'd volunteered to come out a year earlier, and I'd volunteered to go apply for commission in the Indian Army, and we were waiting to be called up all the autumn. We weren't actually called up till December. It kept on being cancelled. It was just before Christmas I was called up. So I did occasionally go up to cinemas in London, and where there might have been the odd bombing. The only time there was anything near was actually one evening when a plane came over and dropped bombs on the Headwood Golf Course, where our house was on the course. And so I went down with my parents to have a look at the craters. It was in the night. That was the only time. I do mention it in my book, actually.
What date would that have been about?
That would have been, I suppose, about sort of November 1940.
Can you tell me about joining the army, please?
Well, when I was at school, I was in the school OTC, and I applied to be attested for a commission and went from Rugby to Birmingham before a Wasby board, War Office Selection Board. I was very young for my age, and I went with, by chance, it was a friend who was playing the school 15, you see, and he would be able to answer the question, "Are you in the school 15?" I said, "No, I'm not." And the very last thing, they did say they'd accepted me and put me in as a recommendation, but I was, "You will try and get in the school 15, won't you?" I said, "I'll try very hard." They definitely were. I'd be hard pushed to get into the house 15. But they did say, then you must go back to, you must go back. I was going up there, that was in 1939, October or so, no? So go back to school, and we weren't going to be called up till we were 20, you see. And then in the summer of 1940, when the Dunkirk etc. happened, I got a thing saying, "Would you like to volunteer to be called up a year earlier?" And I said yes. And then, "Would you like to join, be considered for commission in the Indian Army, as you've been accepted for commission?" And I jumped at it because I loved the idea of travelling. I hadn't done much except going with my parents to ski or go to Italian lakes, but I always liked the idea and always did all my life. Well, now I'm a bit arthritic travelling, so I absolutely jumped at the idea of going to India. And I was called up, and we eventually went down to Aldershot in just before Christmas, and a whole lot of schoolboys. There were also some came from who had been in the forces for a bit. And we all wore these white hat bands and were jeered at by all the troops in Aldershot. Anyhow, so we avoided them. And then we were shipped out in January from Scotland in bitter cold weather, across the Atlantic in a converted meat boat, the Highland Chieftain. We went across the Atlantic, a long way across to avoid new boats and things. Came back to Africa. We went to Freetown but weren't allowed ashore because of malaria and things. And then we went down to Durban, which is around the other side of the Cape. But it was our first stop, which was sort of paradise place if you've been 2 months in the bitter Atlantic in winter. We had sort of a couple of 3 days there with shore leave. And then we were going straight to India, but there was a German pocket battleship was reported, and we scuttled into Mombasa in Kenya, but we weren't allowed ashore there either. And then we went from there to Bombay, and then I went to Bangalore, the Octu, called itself Cadet College. In India, it was still very pre-war.
About what date did you arrive in India?
I said March 41. Early March, beginning of March 41, I'd have said.
And were you destined for a particular regiment?
Not at that time. When we then did this course, which is a 6 months course for those of us who come straight from school. And then when we were passed, we're going to pass out, we were asked to give a choice of three regiments, or three which you'd like to join in the Indian Army, you see, in the order you wanted. I knew nothing about the Indian Army at all. I had no connections with it. There happened to be a chap I was quite friendly with in my section there who said, "Oh, well, his father was in the 10th Baluch and he was going in." So I applied for the 10th Baluch. That's where I went.
But first of all, you went to Bangalore.
Bangalore was a cadet, called itself Cadet College. It was an officer training place.
What happened to you there? Can you give some details of that, please?
Well, we did training for 6 months, basic training, and we learnt Urdu. We obviously had to take it in turns to command the other chaps, from whether section leader, platoon commander, or I suppose company commander. We did exercises out on Agram Plain, which was a very bare expanse. There was only about one day's jungle training where we did go over to a jungle in Mysore. In those days, Japan was not in the war, and they were not really concerned with jungle. They were thinking more or less in terms of the Middle East for most of the Indian Army in those days.
What impressions had India made on you at first and its people?
I'm afraid, in subsequent years, I've been fascinated by India, we've travelled a bit on these sort of cultural tours. My wife's sort of lectured in art and things like that, I became much more interested in them. At the time, I was just a very young chap who wanted to sort of enjoy himself, going play tennis and swimming at the British United Services Club or something like that, and was stuck to my own people. And it was only, apart from appreciating the beauty of some of the places we went up in the Nilgiri Hills for our leave, I'd say I always enjoyed natural beauty, and even on some of these exercises we did, I found this countryside fascinating, but I wasn't interested in Indians at all there. I only interested my own fellow Europeans.
Had you so far kept healthy, or did you fall sick?
I was fine at Bangalore.
What was the next step?
Well, I was commissioned in September, early September 1941, went on leave, which again was to the Nilgiri Hills, which is Uttarakhand and Kunur and places like that, and for about sort of a few days. Then I went and joined my unit, the 7th, 10th Baluch Regiment, in Madras. I joined them, and very soon after I joined, I was sent on a signals course to Pune so that I could be trained to become the battalion signals officer.
What impression had the battalion made on you at first?
I was quite proud to be a young officer in a battalion. It's a newly formed battalion, I was, I suppose, somewhat in awe of the commanding officer and things, but I was there for a fairly short time and trying to find my feet, really.
Was the commanding officer an awesome character?
Not terribly, no, he wasn't, actually, to be fair. He didn't come with us to Burma. He got scarlet fever, and his second in command took over the battalion. But I was there for only a very short time before I went on this course to Pune.
What did you learn on the course?
Signals, how to signal.
What kind of signaling was that?
Well, we did obviously Morse code was the sort of basic thing we signaled to each other in, but we used even heliographs in the sun. Fat lot of use they were in the Burmese jungle, and and we didn't have any wireless there. But we did semaphoring, that's right, with flags and things like that. And and then with lamps, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, and you had to read Morse code. It was obviously a bit more than that. I mean, they gave us sort of tactical exercises without troops and things, and you had to go on and... So try to be generally intelligent as well as to deal with the signal side of it.
So this was all before the Japanese came into the war?
The Japanese came into the war, I think it's while I was there. They came into the war, didn't they, December the 8th, 1941, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's about right. And they came into the war while I was still there. And one thing I rather omitted, I said I went straight away to Pune, but we did in fact move from Madras to join the 17th Indian Division at Ahmednagar while I was still there. Ahmednagar in South India. And so we were getting onto a war footing, whereas in Madras, the battalion wasn't really on a war footing, it was just sitting in Madras. But we joined this division. It was fairly soon after we got to Ahmednagar that I left. But we moved to Ahmednagar very quickly after I got to Madras.
What happened to you there?
In Ahmednagar? Yeah. Well, I didn't have very long. I got a photograph of myself back in my book on a motorbike there. I was there for a short time, you see, and then went on this signal course. And then I came back just before Christmas. It was between the 8th December, the Japanese entering the war. By that time, the battalion had moved from Ahmednagar to a place called Kidgan, preparatory to that 17th Indian Division. And two brigades from the Indian 17th Indian Division sailed for the Middle East. We were trained for the Middle East, and they sailed for the Middle East. But then, in midstream, so to speak, they were diverted to Singapore. 46th Brigade and Divisional Headquarters were left at Kegan. They moved us to across to Calcutta, and this is in early January 1942. That's right. Got it right. Yes, 1942. Early January 42. We landed in Rangoon on the 16th of January 1942.
What was happening in Rangoon when you got there?
We didn't stop in Rangoon. We moved very quickly from Rangoon into to go down to South Burma, because about the same day as we landed in Rangoon, the Japanese attacked Kokorik, east of Moulmein. So they started their invasion of Burma about the same time as we landed. And we were moved from Rangoon. I think we spent a couple of nights in some wooded jungle, because I found out that the wireless set which I'd had in Kegan in India for my chaps, which worked fairly well there, they're only small ones, you know, to go between the companies and things like that, were absolutely useless among the trees. And of course the heliographs weren't any use amongst the trees either. So really, the signalling was down largely, to running lines, you know, lines of signal wire and telephoning.
When you got to Burma, were things organised or chaotic?
You certainly moved around in the first few weeks. We were moved around all over the place. The odd thing was, see, the Japanese, in those 3 weeks, they defeated the brigade at Kokorik, and then they sort of went. It wasn't expected that any army could get across that pass, but they did, you see, and they were just sort of gradually bringing their troops in, and we didn't know where they were. And then they did take Moulmein, we were shot down to, I mean, we moved down quickly to the Martaban, which is opposite Moulmein, and lined up there. And then we were moved away somewhere else. It was all fairly chaotic, but there was this one great barrier at that time, which was the River Selwyn. And so we were moving, being moved up and down, really, to protect that, that once more Moulmein had fallen, that was the next sort of barrier. I suppose it wasn't very efficient, because we suddenly were seconded to another brigade and that sort of thing. But all this day took about 3 weeks, as far as I was concerned. And then I went to the battle. I was taken prisoner.
Can you go through the details of that, please?
Well, yes. What happened is, and I probably got it more down in my book, but about the 7th of February, something like that, we went to a place called Kuzake, a village opposite Pa'an on the River Selwyn. Our battalion was put there. We took over from 1st 7th Gurkhas. 16 miles along the road back was a little village called Dunzik, which was on the River Domtami, and that was where the next battalion was. So we were isolated. We were 16 miles from the nearest battalion at the end of the road, and we were told to stay there until we were relieved, until the battalion, which was at Dunzik, when we were attacked, they were supposed to attack the Japanese in the rear and throw them into the River Selwyn. We stayed in, but that was going to be basically the plan. While we were there those few days, we were bombed about 3 times, dive bombed and things, and in those days Japan had air superiority over us. Anyway, it wasn't until the night of, I think 12th February, I think it was, the Japanese had landed the day before on the 11th, for the place called Pagat, which is south of Dunzik and Pa'an, they'd annihilated our patrol base there. We had patrol bases north and south of our position, and the plan was really to deny the crossing from Pa'an to Kuzik, where we were placed, to deny the crossing to the Japanese. Well, they landed in the night of the 11th of February, I think, and destroyed our base at Pagat. There was no communication. It wasn't my responsibility, but there were two signalers from brigade who had a radio which should have worked. It's one of the better ones, not the one we used to have just in the battalion, which we'd abandoned by then. But they were incapable of getting through all afternoon. Our orders had been to stay there and to fight until the last man, the last round, until we were relieved. The first part of the plan worked admirably. The Japanese did attack us. Second didn't, because the orders were given to the 5th 17th Dogras, who were on their way when we were attacked, counterattack from the Japanese rear, were ordered back. There are a lot has been written about it, and I don't think I'll say more than that. They never arrived. I found out quite a lot, because the CO of the Dogras was taken prisoner later when the River Satang bridge was blown up, and joined us in Moulmein jail. And so he told us what happened, and I do refer to all that in my book. But people have been writing, quite a lot has been written about why we were left there, etc. Anyhow, what did happen was that on the, I suppose it was 12th February, that's right, I think, that the in the early hours of the morning, the Japanese attacked, and for 4 hours they were held, the perimeter remained, it was intact, and they were, in fact, although we didn't know at the time, an absolutely crack Japanese division who had been called the White Tigers, who had fought in China, and they were top-class troops. We, as I just said, were newly formed battalion with very young soldiers who had a minimum amount of training, and officers like me who come straight from school. I had had that minimum amount of training too. I mean, you could see, and I agree there were one or two more senior ones, but not so many, because the Indian Army is expanding. In actual fact, the battalion has received a lot of praise, as General Leon Lal Grant has written the latest book on the retreat in Burma, said that it was the first time the British stood their ground against a major Japanese attack, and they put up a gallant performance, but it was doomed to failure as they had no artillery support, and we had no wire or anything like that, and we were up against top-class opposition. Anyway, we were overrun after 4 hours. I joined the CO who had been cut here in the adjutant at the very beginning of the battle, had gone to what's called the riverfront queue, is what I heard him call the adjutant, and they went across the road to the river. But the Japanese attack didn't come across from the river. But unfortunately, they were cut off for the next few hours by a lot of what we call friendly fire, by the machine gun section, was blazing away at, frankly, an imaginary enemy. When it was daylight and there was a great quiet there, I was told that CO and the adjutant had come back to battalion headquarters. I'd been out to another position, and so I rushed across to join them, and it was at that moment that the mortars from across the river at Pa'an opened up on the hill where a CO and a lot of chaps were walking in a southerly direction. I called out in sort of what was meant to be a reassuring way, that everyone started to move for cover, saying as quickly as possible or something, and the CO called out in English, "There's no hurry." And those were his last words. But I went and joined him, and I walked across that hill with him so slowly. And he never spoke to me, actually. I just sort of followed him. And all the troops there were